session number 11322, rule 1.
Mr. Napier, reel 1. You joined the Navy in 1935. Could you tell me how that came about, please?
I was at school at the time, and I found that a lot of poverty and unemployment was going on in Jarrow, and my father had left Milford Haven and gone back to Jarrow, and I wasn't really satisfied with my schooling, and one day, a person came into the classroom asking for volunteers for the Royal Navy. I put my hand up. And so from there, I went to the training ship Arethusa. And from thence, from the Arethusa to the Royal Navy.
What was the training and life like on the Arethusa?
The training and life on the Arethusa was quite good. The instructors on board were ex-Merchant Navy, and the commanding officer was an ex-Navy commander, Commander Bowers by name, and his wife was a real good, thorough person who mothered you. I was just turned 13 at the time, and I found that all the other boys who were with me, about 140 to 150 all told, they were all treated alike. And we found that the education and everything on board the ship was very good indeed.
Where was the Arethusa?
The Arethusa at the time was moored at Greenhithe, and it was an old wooden wall which was moored just astern of HMS Worcester. That was the cadet training ship for the Merchant Navy and the Royal Navy. We changed ships from the old wooden wall, Arethusa, to the steel Arethusa, which is moored at Stroud, Rochester, Kent. She was a three-masted sailing ship, XP King by name, which later served during the war as an overflow for the barracks of Chatham, and later sold to the Americans, and she is now moored in one of the West Coast ports of America. From there I joined the Royal Navy. I left the Arethusa in March 1935, and joined the Navy at Chatham Barracks.
What was your basic training like there?
My basic training was very good indeed. I went to St. Vincent, HMS St. Vincent, as a boy, second class.
Why was it so good?
They furthered my education. And We heard such a lot of about bullying and things in the old days, but we found that at St. Vincent there was no bullying at all. Everyone was treated with respect. Discipline was strict, but we had no trouble with bullying.
Was your first ship the Exeter?
My first ship was the Exeter. I joined her in October 1936.
What was Exeter like to live on?
Oh, the Exeter was a very happy ship indeed.
Why do you think it was so happy? Why do you think it was so happy?
Being my first ship, everyone was comradey. We had quite a lot of personnel on board who were quite seasoned sailors and things, and they'd been together on other ships for a long time, and we found that if you want to go and have a shower in the bathroom, you could take all your things off and leave your money and your wallet on the mess table, and you'd go and have your shower and come back and your money wasn't touched, it was still there. We found she was very happy.
What were relations like with the officers?
The officers were very good indeed. They treated you with respect, and we treated them with respect. Quite firm discipline.
Were there any special duties which the Exeter carried out before the war that you can recollect?
Yes, our first special duty was at the riots of Trinidad, when Uriah Butler led a lot of the Negroes, and he started a mutiny in the pitch fields and the tar, where the tar was made in Trinidad. And the governor of the island, I think it was Mr. Fletcher at the time, he sent for help, as one of the policemen had been murdered in trying to quell the rioting at one of these places inside, just outside Trinidad. So the Exeter went there, and Ajax came along at the same time.
Do you remember the date when these riots occurred?
I have the dates written down somewhere, but I can't. It was in 1937 when the ship was called to Trinidad.
How did you know about that background to it? I mean, how did you get to know about the name of Uriah Butler and about the pitch fields and so on? Who told you all that?
The information was got through notice boards on board the ship. We were kept informed of everything that was going on the island by the government house, and the commander of the Exeter made sure that the remainder of the ship's company knew everything that was going on.
What duties did the Exeter have in these riots then?
The Exeter landed three platoons, one platoon of Marines and two platoons of sailors, and they took over and assisted the police in the operations inside Trinidad and on the grounds of the pitch fields and things.
Did you go ashore yourself?
I did not go ashore, no.
Was that because you were too young?
Just because I was too young, yes. And I was also the fender boy for the Commodore's barge. And we were excused going ashore because of the barge itself.
Had the government in Trinidad lost control then?
They had lost control until we arrived, yes. There was looting and one person had been shot and killed.
Did any of the shore parties speak to you about what had happened whilst they were on shore?
Well, they did when they returned, and there were only a few instances happened with the shore parties, but I think Uriah Butler, once he knew that the Navy was there, he took to his heels and fled, and got over from Trinidad over to New Zealand by boat, to Venezuela, through.
Any other duties that you recollect before the war with the Exeter?
Well, the World Fair in New York in 1939.
What did the Exeter do there?
She was one of the ships showing the flag representing the Royal Navy at the World's Fair in New York. And at the same time, our band went to Washington, and our king and queen were over in Washington at the time, and they played at the White House for garden parties, and also they did play at the World's Fair itself.
When war was declared, did it take you by surprise, or had you expected it?
Well, we had expected it since we'd been in operation with the 1938 crisis. The Exeter was shadowing between the River Plate and Pernambuco, shadowing German vessels, which we thought could have guns inside their holes. One ship, I believe, was the Tacoma, which was a fast liner, and we thought she would have armament on board.
What did the shadowing involve? Just following them?
Keeping at discreet distances from the merchantmen, yes, and following them.
Did you get close enough to the German ships for there to be any interaction between the British sailors and the Germans?
Well, we were around 20 mile away, so the Exeter had 8-inch guns, so she could have most probably outnumbered the guns on board the merchantmen if they had them.
But was there any shouting to each other?
Oh, no.
What duties was the Exeter engaged in when war broke out?
Could you say
when
again,
war
please?
Broke out, what were the duties of Exeter at that time?
The Exeter, when war broke out, we had returned to this country, to UK, and one watch had been sent on leave, but we were recalled after 3 days, and we all returned to Devonport. Fuel ship, ammunition ship, and storage ship, and we were at sea within 3 days of our recall, and on our way to Freetown. In fact, we had dumped all our woodwork, anything which could cause a fire, at Freetown, and we were on our way to South America from Freetown when war was declared.
What kind of woodwork did you dump?
The woodwork covering the bollards and everything on the quarter deck, and also on the forecastle. Anything which would burn, cause fire, we dumped.
Did it inconvenience you much to get rid of this woodwork?
Oh, no inconvenience at all. The ship was quite tiddly in those days, and quite a lot of this woodwork was scrubbed and lily white in colour.
Quite tiddly?
Quite tiddly.
What does that mean?
Ship shape. Tiddly was clean and ship shape.
Was that when you started patrolling the Atlantic?
We went down as far as the River Plate at that time. But first of all, we refueled at Rio, and from Rio we went down south to the River Plate area and to the Falkland Islands. There we continued our patrol until we met up with the Ajax, and the Commodore Howard transferred his flag from the Exeter to the Ajax.
And the Achilles?
The Achilles arrived with Ajax, but we only saw Achilles one day before the action. The Achilles arrived on the scene one day before the action, and we practiced torpedo attacks and everything, and close formation with all three ships. on the 12th of December, the day before we went into action with the Grafs Bay.
Did you know exactly what these patrols were all about? Were you kept informed that you were hunting for a German raider?
Well, we knew there was a pocket battleship in the vicinity, because we had been told by commander, by the ship's commander, that there was a pocket battleship in the vicinity or in the area of either the Indian Ocean or the South Atlantic, and we were out there to get her if possible.
How did you and your shipmates feel about this? Because you were so much more lightly armed than a German battleship. Did you feel nervous about it?
Well, we knew we had the speed. And as regarding being lightly armed, etc., we knew we only had 8-inch guns to her 11-inch. And we thought the battle would be won through manoeuvrability and speed, which did turn out that way in a way, because the Ajax and Achilles, they kept on either quarter of the Grafs Bay and did fast attacks on Grafs Bay, and Grafs Bay had to divide her armament, forward turrets onto the Exeter and the after turrets onto either the Ajax or Achilles.
What was your own action station at that time?
My own action station was on the .5 machine guns situated on B gun deck, right alongside the door leading into the bridge from B gun deck on the port side. The .5s were four barrel .5 machine guns, one above the other.
What exactly were you personally supposed to do with them?
I was trainer. I was a trainer of the gun. The guns really were meant for close range ACAC, but we could also fire at any targets on the surface, a range of about a mile and a half.
Can you tell me what, in detail, step by step, what you recollect of the Battle of the River Plate as you personally witnessed it?
Well, I had fallen out of action stations just after 5 o'clock in the morning and gone down to my mess deck on the port side forward, the topman's mess deck, and I went to sleep on top of the lockers. At around 6:15, the bugle sounded, action stations, with no G. In other words, it was followed by at the double on the bugle. So we closed up, and I got from the topman's mess deck and cleared away the .5 machine gun on the port side of B gun deck. Having arrived at my station, I could see smoke on the horizon, right dead ahead. In the meantime, the ship had altered course, and we could feel the vibration of the engines as the ships picked up speed. And we were heading at fine inclination toward the enemy. I remember the fall of shot of the enemy on either side of us. And at the same time, we had been ordered from the bridge to take cover. And at that order, myself and the other member of the gun's crew took shelter inside the bridge superstructure, in through the door on the port side of the bridge, at the lower part of the bridge. We hadn't been there 5 to 10 minutes before B turret was hit, and the shell must have continued from B turret and straight through the bridge, killing most of the personnel except the captain and the commander. And I believe the boy boy messenger was on the bridge as well. He was all right. But all other personnel were killed. At the same time, I was standing underneath the ladder, which went up to the Commodore's cabin, up to his sea cabin. And at that period, there was a head came tumbling down the steps of the ladder from the bridge, and I recognised the person's head. I recognised who it was. It was a chief yeoman of signals. It was rather squeamish, and I think the blood must have drained out of my body when I first saw it. It's a thing I never speak of hardly, because it happened so quickly, and we were devastated by the sight. We moved from the bridge, knowing that we couldn't do anything at all in that area, and I moved down into the port waist of the ship, down by the torpedo tubes. At that time, the starboard torpedo tubes had been hit by shrapnel caused by a near miss, killing most of the torpedo gun's crew and wounding several others. I helped with the first aid parties in doing up what the best I could of the wounded. And at that period, the hatch amidships between the two torpedo tubes above the 4-inch magazine, Chief TGM was blown up through the hatch, and he caught his leg on the combing of the hatch as he was blown up with a blast of a Lemlin shell exploding.
What's a TGM?
Torpedo gunner's mate. He would be with the damage control parties down in the flat of the chief PO's mess, and the flat leading to the 4-inch magazine. I helped first aid with the chief TGM and placed the hip back into the joint and put a bandage on. During this period, our decks were swimming with water. The hydrants had burst in places by shrapnel penetrating the valves and causing us to lose water pressure in fighting the fires. I heard someone call on, they wanted some help in directing orders from the after control position to the after tiller flat. So I joined the party of men passing orders from the after control tower to the after steering position, steering orders. And this I did until the end of the action. In fact, I was still doing it after, when the ship drew out of the action and headed towards the Falkland Islands.
How did that chain work in passing the steering orders? Did that system work well or not?
The system worked very well indeed, yes.
Because people say that passing something by word of mouth from one person to another, by the time it gets to the other end, the message gets distorted.
But our orders were just short and sweet. One couldn't possibly distort the orders. Orders given from the after control tower were starboard 15, midships. And these orders were passed from word of mouth from one person to another, and so forth, right down the chain.
During the action, how close did you see the Graff's Bay approach to the Exeter?
There was one period when I looked out from the waist over the port torpedo tubes. I saw the Graff's Bay steering on a parallel course to the Exeter. I would say it looked to me as if it was around 600 to 700 yards quite close because one could see the huge swastika flags flying from the main and foremost.
You were telling me earlier about the idea that the commanding officer had of ramming the grouse pig.
Yes, it was at that period when I'm sure the captain, Captain Bell, had stated, seeing that white turret was only firing one gun, and we were so close to the grouse pig, we could turn toward her and ram her, most probably finishing ourselves off and doing severe damage to the Graf Spee herself. We didn't know she was Graf Spee at the time. We thought it was the Scheer, Admiral Scheer.
How frightening was it, being in the battle with the Graf Spee?
Well, it was more frightening when I found that I wasn't able to fire back at her. I felt as if I wanted to do something to keep myself occupied, which I did do. It was a terrible experience. One can't describe it. I'd be around, just turned 20 at the time. But there were younger personnel on board than I. Some lads just 17, 18 year old. It was probably something the first experience of battle.
What were the physical symptoms of the fear? Does your throat go dry or what?
I think trembling more than anything else, of fright. The experience of seeing the head coming down to me at the foot of the stairs on the bridge, it shook me so much that really at the time I didn't know what to do myself, as I recognised the head. And it was my first experience of seeing a person, well, decapitated.
Did any of the older petty officers take the younger ones under their wing in the battle?
Not to my knowledge, no. They kept us cool and calm, mind you, but I wasn't with any petty officer at all during the action.
How did they keep you cool and calm?
Well, with having something to do, in so much as having to pass orders, and the discipline what we had received most probably kept us to our posts and kept us there, rigid, in so much as waiting for more orders to be passed to you so you could pass them on to another person.
Did people keep to their posts?
Yes, yep.
Did the crew perform efficiently during the action, do you think?
The Exeter Ship's Company were marvellous regarding that. I think it's through the fact that we've been in commission just over 3 years then. In fact, 3 years and 2 months, all told. We knew one another, and we knew what we could do. We knew everybody else's job in the ship, just about. We could carry out other people's work and jobs.
What is it like when a shell from an enemy ship tears through your own ship?
Well, I had the experience of standing inside the waiting room.